Well, mezzo-soprano Joyce DiDonato gave a solo recital at Carnegie Hall a few weeks ago. She wore a red dress and looked every bit the glamorous diva. A few days later, last Thursday, she was at the Metropolitan Opera House wearing trousers and playing Isolier, an ardent young page who's one-third of a romantic triangle in Gioacchino Rossini's final comic opera, Le Comte Henri. It was first performed at the Paris Opera in 1828 to great success, but it's taken 183 years for Le Comte Henri to make it to the Metropolitan Opera in a production directed by Bartlett Sher. Joining Mr. DiDonato in the cast are two singers celebrated for their high notes, the Peruvian tenor Juan Diego Flores and the German soprano Diana Damrau. Le Comte Henri is being performed seven more times through April 21st, and the matinee on Saturday, April 9th, will be broadcast on the radio and transmitted in high definition to movie theaters around the world as part of the Met Live in HD series. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Joyce DiDonato to our show. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Didn't all three of the leads in this production appear in before at the Met in Mr. Scher's production of Rossini's Barbara of Seville? I'm not going to do the Italian. Barbiere di Seviglia?
Ecco, very good. Bravo, bravo. We did. Actually, Diana and Juan Diego premiered the piece when it was a new production in the fall, and then I took over in the spring. Juan Diego and I did it together, and it was one of these inaugural HD broadcasts, that first season that those happened.
And now you're all back together.
We're all together.
I've always asked actors about this. If you've worked together before, does that help?
I think it does, absolutely. There's, first of all, you don't have to spend any time getting to know each other as performers. And there's an element of trust that is there. Deanna and I actually performed together in Ariadne in Madrid. So we'd already had a very good working relationship. And Juan Diego and I have performed together a lot of times.
Well, all of you are from other parts of the world, and you all wind up meeting in some central place.
It is. It's an incredible meeting of worlds and cultures and personalities.
And add to that Bartlett Sher, who's probably best known for his Tony Award-winning productions of South Pacific and The Light in the Piazza. Since he comes out of musical theater, does he bring something different to opera than one of the more experienced opera directors?
Well, I think one of Bart's strengths is that he has a great eye for comic timing. So I know both the Barber of Seville and Comte Henri are comedies, and so he's able to, help us find the right kind of timing, and that's been a really good plus.
And you have become something of a Rossini specialist, and he wrote a lot of comic operas, although this is an atypical one. Do you like doing comedy? Because most people think of opera, they think of Sturm und Drang, don't they?
Absolutely. I love it. It's really like champagne, I have to say. You know, the music fizzes with excitement, and there's nothing quite like getting a laugh on the operatic stage, I have to say. And in particular, this piece, since it's not well known to the audience at the Met, people are listening with an extra kind of added excitement. And the jokes are, I think, very surprising, and the situations are very surprising. So it's a real joy to hear that laughter come out.
And the jokes are there partly because this is based on a play. This is an odd merging, isn't it, of an opera that Rossini had done to celebrate the coronation of Charles X in France, and then a one-act vaudeville play?
Exactly. And I think one of the reasons he's accused of recycling some of his music, which is true, but the idea that the Viaggio a Reims was a coronation piece, it wasn't going to be seen in theaters. It was going to fall off by the wayside. So I think he rightly said, you know, this is some of the greatest music I've composed, so I need to make sure people hear this. And he recycled it. This shows the genius of Rossini, because he was able to take the same music in an Italian opera and set it then later to a French libretto and still have it sparkle.
And he wrote, this opera is in French as well. So he just did Italian and French in the same way that Mozart could do German and Italian?
It's a ridiculous amount of talent.
Because people had abilities we don't have. I can't imagine any contemporary composer writing in more than one language.
Well, actually, Jake Heggie, actually. I've done a number of his pieces, and he speaks French. So I don't know that he's written in French, but I bet if he tried.
Well, he could do it. This is based on a play, which is about Comte Henri and his band of knights who insinuate themselves into a French convent during the Crusades. It's been expanded.
It has been expanded a bit. And, you know, he starts the first scene dressed as a hermit, trying to woo the women, as you do. And then later, the idea of trying to get into this fortress where the countess has closed herself off. They have to dress as nuns, as pilgrims.
He's wooing the women because their husbands have gone off to the Crusades.
Exactly.
And the women have vowed to be faithful. And along comes this attractive man who says, I've been living the life of a hermit. And they all suddenly forget their vows.
And they swoon for him.
Now, the original thing is set in 1200, but Rossini's opera is set in around 1200, but not this production.
Well, yes, they've sort of updated it in a – Bart, I think, has made an easy choice, and then he set it in a theater. So we're under the guise of a theatrical production, and the costumes become a mix of some of the costumes of the day, and it's quite delightful.
Now, it was a hit when it was originally produced in Paris. Why do you think it's never become part of the standard repertory?
Well, I think like some of Rossini's more difficult operas, they become difficult to cast. You have to have, in this case, really five-star soloists who can handle the virtuosity of the bel canto repertoire. I think sometimes French opera suffers a little bit of prejudice that we don't think it's quite as good. But a lot of the Rossini aficionados will say that this is one of his greatest works and greatest comedies in particular.
And Mr. Flores sang Ori at the Rossini Festival in Pissarro some years back, about 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That performance was recorded live on Deutsche Grammophon. And I suspect that got people thinking about producing it elsewhere. Or was it just the Met?
Well, I think that may have actually played into it. And certainly, you know, Juan Diego is one of the singers that people can say, what would you like to sing? And so he has and I think he's using it wisely, the ability to bring attention to some of these lesser known works.
And this work is Le Comte d'Ory, which is being performed at the Met, seven times?
Yes, we had our second show last night, so I believe there's six more remaining.
And then there'll be the television and radio version. The radio version, I think, broadcast on WQXR, our sister station here. This may be the first time that you've sung Isolier, but you have done mail pages at the Met before.
I sang Cherubino for my debut in 2005.
That's Mozart?
It's Mozart, yeah, in The Marriage of Figaro. Isolier is a few years older, and Cherubino sings of all this desire for women, and Isolier happily is old enough to actually make good on his word, his desires.
Is playing male characters a specialty of yours, or does it come with being a mezzo-soprano?
It comes with the territory of being a mezzo. So I've probably spent roughly 50% of my time in pants and 50% in skirts. And I love it. It opens up a whole nother world as a performer. And I get to sort of go into forbidden territory, which is a lot of fun.
And it's the kind of fun that we get in some of Shakespeare's plays, in which sometimes a woman plays a man or a man plays a woman, and we know who they really are. In this case, you're a man who also tries to pass off as a woman at one point.
Well, I'm always a man. It's the Juan Diego has the role where he is a man who dresses as a nun. And the famous climactic part of the opera is the famous trio where there's the soprano, the mezzo myself, who's a girl but playing a boy, and then the tenor gets into bed and he's a guy who sort of is playing a girl. So we have a situation that's ridiculous and fabulous.
And very funny.
Yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with arms and legs becoming intertwined and people repositioning themselves for being in the best place in this threesome. And I assume that was all that came out of the directorial genius of Bart Lasher.
Well, it's also something that happens in the course of the rehearsal process. You know, there's four minds at work. You have the director and then you have the three performers. And I think we're all experimenting and we're all trying to come up with something that fits.
Well, in the past, we didn't expect opera singers to be able to act all that well. But now the standards are pretty high. And this kind of could function even if you weren't singing.
Well, I have to say I take a little bit of exception to that because I think, you know, if we look at old movies from the 30s or 40s, the acting standard has changed. But I would never accuse those performers of not acting. I think in opera, the tastes and the standards have changed, but singers would stand on stage and create incredible characters. It's just not that they were running upside down and, you know, hanging off of bedposts and things like that. So the standard has changed. But I would never take away from the opera singers of yore to say that they weren't acting. I think that the tastes have changed.
Well, I saw some people who looked a little stiff in the past. Wonderful singers like Jan Pierce and Victoria de Los Angeles. Wonderful singers, but...
But you can. There's an argument to be made.
I never believed them in La Boheme.
Well, but what they did with their voices, I mean, there's exceptions, and we don't have great actors today. And I mean, we have all different levels of singing actors and things. But the standard of acting with the voice was pretty mm-hmm. unbelievable in those days.
You're going to, this past January, you sang a very different kind of role, Sister Helen Prejean in Dead Man Walking at the Houston Grand Opera. Is it true that you know what you're going to be doing through the year 2016?
Pretty much. I'm trying to fight for a few weeks of vacation here and there in between, but I do. I've got a full schedule.
Well, you've had some problems. Didn't you have a serious accident in the Barber of Seville some years back?
I did. It was 2 years ago at the opening night of the Barber of Seville at Covent Garden, and I had just finished my opening cavatina, Una Voce Poco Fa, and I took a tumble on stage. I had no idea at the time that it was actually broken. I just knew it was...
A fibula.
My fibula, exactly. It was just painful. That's all I knew. But I ended up finishing the performance.
You grabbed a crutch. Was there a crutch handy?
The National Health Security had a nurse on board there backstage, and she found a crutch for me.
And then you sang the rest in a wheelchair.
The rest of the performances, yeah. And we captured it on DVD, believe it or not.
But I would assume there was a certain forced sabbatical as a result of that. You didn't just keep on performing everywhere after that.
Well, this came in the summer, which was great. I had a few more concerts left to do, and I did the concerts on crutches and seated in Aix-en-Provence and London. But then I had a month off, which was very, very welcome. But I never canceled anything from it.
Grew up in Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
Were you aware of opera from an early age?
My father would try and get me to listen to the Met broadcasts on Saturday afternoon, but I was a little bit distracted. And we had at that time PBS, you know, great performances. The first thing I remember seeing on one of those was Don Giovanni with Carol Vanesse and Pavarotti. And I was hooked.
Mm. We once had June Anderson here, and she followed Eileen Farrell, didn't realize who she was. She said, "That's how I became interested in opera. I was babysitting some people, and there was this record, and I put it on. It was Eileen Farrell." And they said, "Gee, that sounds interesting."
Oh, fabulous. Yeah, well, I'm such a huge. I love her. I Got a Right to Sing the Blues disc. Oh, that's standard.
A lot of opera singers are doing pop songs. Renee Fleming just made some recordings with, I think, Brad Meldow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that appeals to you as well?
Well, I've always been a believer that good music is good music. And I was never, you know, this huge opera fan growing up. I was a child of the 80s and, you know, I loved jazz being from Kansas City and some of the old standards. So for me, good music is good music.
Mention should be made of some of the other singers in the cast. You said that it really requires five singers. There's this Swedish mezzo, Suzanne Rismark, who is just... fabulous. Actually, I think there were six great singers.
That's true.
French baritone Stéphane Degout and the Italian bass baritone Michela Petrucci. Just an amazing cast and a lot of fun.
It goes from strength to strength.
So do you know if other people are going to be mounting Le Comte d'Ory as a result of the success of this?
You know, I don't know. But
great review in the Times.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, more importantly than that, actually, the response of the public has been really overwhelming. It's a rollicking good time, and the public has the final word.
Well, thank you so much for being with us, Joyce DiDonato, the mezzo who plays Isolier, the page who is the love interest in Le Comte d'Ory.
I get the girl in the end.
And you can see it as part of the Met Live and HD series when it will be made available in local theaters. That's Saturday, April 9th. You can also hear it on the radio. And there are six other performances at the Met.
Yes.
Thank you again.
Thanks, Leonard.